So I actually live in a small village called Patrick. There's a couple of hundred people living in the village, and there's two community buildings. There's the church and the churchyard, and there's the old school, which is a 150-year-old historic building, lovely building. Hasn't been used as a school for a long, long time, and it's the bottom building there where it says the visitor centre. This is on, from our website. That school, it's used by the community just occasionally, just one or two times a year, harvest festivals, things like that. But what it has is a very special location, and its location, this is just talking about the, what I need to talk about today, are just about our community projects. But the visitor centre location is directly opposite this entrance, and this is the entrance to Nicolo Farm. So Nicolo Farm, it's been left via a will to the people of the Isle of Man, so it's entrusted to the Isle of Man government. I read an article a few years ago now when we were first looking at this, and it was an article that talked about the fact that if you look at Nicolo today, all you see are the green fields, and there's only one small sign at the side that talks about the hidden history of those green fields, which is the fact that in World War One, the sign actually says there were over 20,000 German civilians. In actual fact, there were 23,000. They were from various different places. And that is all that's there, really, that a passerby can see. And that article was written by Panikos. But when you actually delve a little bit deeper, and most of the people on the island simply weren't aware of the fact that 100 years ago, it looked like that. That's that same entrance. It shows the train which used to have to take the incredible amount of goods that had to go into the camp to look after over 23,000 internees and a few thousand guards. And the goods had to go into the camp, and the fuel had to go into the camp. And this was actually a huge... It was a city, really, in our little village. There are actually still signs at the entrance there, but interestingly, those signs try to keep away the people who actually used to come out from Douglas, specifically to see the aliens behind the wire, because it was a little bit of a tourist attraction in Patrick. So that's Nicolo today. 100 years ago, that's similar to the picture that Panikos had there. And that city, that wooden city, that has you can see all the long huts, and you can see next to the huts there's a little recreation areas that were really, to be honest, a sea of mud. It doesn't always have quite that blue sky on the Isle of Man. That's quite wet and windy. But this city, this wooden city, actually saved the island from bankruptcy, precisely because the British government were putting this money into it, and actually a lot of people on the island were supplying goods to it. But it didn't take very long once the war ended for that to go. And the whole city was dismantled, and it was removed from the site. But the other thing that was removed was the stories about Nicolo, because the people who were there were these German men, and many of them had wives that were, obviously the wives that were in Britain, lots of those wives actually stayed in Britain. Lots of them had British-born children. But the British-born children were very much told, you don't ever talk about the fact that your father was a German or Austro-Hungarian and that he was interned. You don't talk about that. Don't mention it at school. And especially as the war, as time progressed and we started to build up towards the Second World War, again, it was that those oral histories were lost. In many families, those oral histories were lost. And so many of the descendants that come and talk to us, I say, I just never knew until I found this document in our family papers. I just never knew that he was interned during World War One. So the map there, that shows Nicolo as it used to be. So you can see there that Nicolo was actually split into four separate camps. And within those camps, there were these compounds. So there were actually 23 compounds. And each compound you can just about see there the little buildings that housed just over 1,000 people in each compound. And actually, although today all there are green fields, you can actually see the boundaries of the four camps. You can see those boundaries. You can also see a little bit of the boundaries of the compounds. And although those huts, they were sold off, some of them went on there's a few that are still left on the island that are now little holiday homes. They look quite different. But actually, the foundations of those huts are still there on the camp. And what they did is they broke up the foundations, and there's now a wall that goes right the way up the main drive on each side, and that is made from the foundations of the huts of the camp. So there's still evidence there. There's also evidence around the village. So although Nkelo had four separate camps within it, actually for the internees there were five camps, and that middle photograph is camp five, and that's how they saw that. So that was where you can see there, just the graves there are of the guards who died whilst they were at the camp. But also in this area in front, the green area just in front of there, there used to be the graves of the internees who died, mainly of natural causes. It was less than a couple of hundred of internees who died, and they were actually laid to rest there. They've now been reinterred in Camp Chase, but actually a few still remain, and those are we've got Turkish graves there, and we've also got two of the Jewish graves. So that's some of the there's various photos there of the various bits of evidence of the camp that's still there. And one of the other pieces of evidence is actually our own schoolrooms itself, which is where most of the inquests took place, and also where any court cases took place, or any robberies went on the camp and things. But what we didn't realise is that actually, whilst Nkelo isn't mentioned on the island, it is mentioned off island, because actually some of the families had found documents, or there were a few oral histories, and we were having descendants coming over to Nkelo to wander around these lovely green fields without us really knowing about it, and without us doing anything about it, particularly on the island. You know, they just wander around at will. There's nobody there to tell them anything about it. So, and we felt that you know, these people are descended from thousands, tens of thousands of people that actually lived in our village for, you know, four and a half years, some of them, for a long, long, long time. So we thought, actually, as a community, don't we have a little bit of responsibility to tell those stories? And weren't they actually part of our community in a way? So, and actually there's a book that a lady wrote about her mother-in-law. And her mother-in-law was a small child at the time when the camp was there. And as a small child, she remembered vividly the fact that she could hear this beautiful, beautiful music coming through her window at night. She could hear this absolutely fantastic music, and she had all sorts of dreams about what it was. But actually, it was the music coming from the incredible orchestras that they had there. I mean, these were really, they had top-class musicians, they had top-class chefs, there was top-class artists, you know, the people who were there were individuals, each with their own skills, each with their own talents, and each with their own stories. And we very much felt that we need to start to record those stories. So we decided that what we needed to do is to set up a visitor centre and also to build a database. And then we saw a news headline that said Nkelo was going to be sold by the Alderman government. And there was all these tales of housing estates that were going to be built, sewerage works that were going to be constructed, basically whatever somebody wanted to buy it for to give it use to it. And as a community, both in terms of the charity that we'd set up in order to do the visitor centre, in order to do something at Nkelo, and in terms of the farming community, just held up their hands and called a public meeting. And we convinced them, and it was great because we managed to convince them that they should not sell Nkelo, and that they should actually, so what they've agreed to do is they've agreed to lease it out to a tenant, but that tenant has to work with us with what we're doing. And this is a little bit about what we're going to be doing. So these are our school rooms where people will start their tour, and they'll do a walking tour, which are the various lines around. We've managed to get a couple of those Nkelo huts that got moved and turned into little holiday homes that people now want to demolish because they want something nicer and bigger and everything. We've managed to convince two people to actually, they didn't really take much convincing. People have really bought into this project, and they've gifted us the Nkelo huts. One of those is there, and we're going to be reinstating those back onto Nkelo itself. And so on the 17th of November in 2014, we launched our website. And that was the date, that was 100 years to the day that the internees first moved into Nkelo. And so symbolically, we moved our first internee onto our website. And that's Carl Farbusch. Carl is typical of so many of the internees there. He came to the UK as a young man. He met his wife there. She was actually a Bavarian opera singer. They moved up to the Wirral. They had five children. He was a very clever man. He could speak seven languages. He was a translator. They lived there very quietly, very happily, many, many, many years. And then war broke out. We heard earlier this morning about the impact of that upon the German people living in Britain, the impact of the Lusitania and the impact of the riots. And it was after the sinking of the Lusitania that Karl was interned. He was 49 years old. He was one of the older internees who would have found it hard being interned behind barbed wire. And sadly, despite the fact that his son enlisted in the British Army to fight for Britain, he was held there, and despite the fact that at the end of the war, all he wanted was to go back to his family, like so many of the internees, the British government felt that they were going to be really quite disenfranchised. They were a problem, and so they actually they shipped them back to Germany. Most of them went back to Germany, and Karl was one of those. And sadly, his family heard from the Red Cross not long afterwards about the fact that he'd died, possibly through the influenza. But when we launched with Karl, what was fantastic is that suddenly, we launched with him because a lady from the Isle of Man, I believe, was her great-grandfather. And then we heard from a gentleman in Australia, and he said, well, actually, I'm related to him as well, and I can tell you a little bit more information. And then we heard from a gentleman in Ireland, and he said, yeah, I'm actually related to him as well, and here's a bit more information. And then all the stories started to come flooding in, and the pictures came flooding in. And what's really special about these pictures is on the back of the pictures, we have details, we have information. We can start to pinpoint who these people were, what they were interested in. And there is, and bring together some of this information, because this is actually what descendants want to know. They want to know about their family and what happened to them. And also, we then started to be contacted by the private collectors, and we are now digitalising all sorts of information and pictures and letters that's never been seen before. And this is one of them. I really like this one because you can see the huts in the background, and you can see in the front here they've built a model village to remind them of home. And what's interesting here, I need to just check this. Earlier on, there was actually all sorts of rabbit hutches. And these are just about the same height as those rabbit hutches. I want to compare this with the photo. And you can see the rabbit just on top there. I don't know whether this is something that they did with the hutches, but all I do know is they put the time and effort and the care into this incredible village. And our collection grows as well. So we've got artifacts, we've got various pictures, and we've got letters. And we've got one of the local schools on the island. This letter is from a 17-year-old boy. We've got a large collection of his letters. And we've got a sixth form on the island at one of the schools. Their students are translating these letters, which is fantastic, because when we were talking about before about engaging with students, these are 17-year-olds translating the letters of a 17-year-old who'd been stuck in Nikalo. And then, of course, we started to understand, obviously we've been reading an awful lot, and a lot of the work that Panikos has done, so much work in this area, and provided with so much knowledge of the whole internment structure. And so the work that Panikos has done, and then finding out about other internees, and this one here is Bernard Kleiser, at the far end of that picture, we started to understand, when we looked into Bernard, that actually he was related to all these other people who were in all sorts of internment camps. He was also, and so we felt that we needed actually to make this more, less about just the Isle of Man, and more about World War I internment, full stop. And that's what we're doing, and thanks very much to Panikos and to the Centre of Hidden Histories, we can move forward with this, because this is where we can now go. We're starting off with the International Red Cross records. They very kindly allowed us to digitise those, which is absolutely fantastic, and bring them into a huge spreadsheet of information that we're trying to pull together that will eventually become a database. And that's one of the records at the far side there. And I just thought I'd copy that one, because that record there is an index card, so the internees would have index cards, And that's the index card for a gentleman called Joseph Pilates. Spelled incorrectly there, but they correct it later. And he was interned for 3.5 years on the Isle of Man. He actually, in the Sports Illustrated article, talks about the fact that it was that time that he spent, he had time to develop his methodology there, looking at the movements of the Manx cat and how the Manx cat, despite being as underfed as they were, was still supple and still fit, and he just watched how they would stretch their limbs and everything. So the Pilates that people do today, so many millions of them, he linked back to that time in internment. There's all the other archives, and those will all be brought in as well. We're bringing information in various archives, and the diaries, and particularly the things that people are sending through to us. This is just extracted from the Centre for Hidden Histories website. But what I'd really like to say, finally, just is thank you, because for the community, for our community, and especially for the descendants, and this lady was over last week, and her grandfather was there. This actually means an awful lot. So it's really, it's a really important thing, I think, that we can provide this, and it's really important for the descendants that this is available. So thank you.